In this episode of Upward Calling, we talk about the righteousness of God. Welcome to Upward Calling. We help Christians to develop a relationship with God by talking with the University Church of Christ evangelist Josh Creel and Dr. Kenny Embry. Listen as we take a deeper dive on a lesson from a recent Sunday service and help you apply it Monday through Saturday. How you doing, Josh?
Kenny, I'm doing well. Afternoon coffee has not kicked in yet. As we were having our pre-podcast discussion, I am going to try not to yawn our way through this podcast. Maybe the dialogue and the discussion will be so enlivening that nobody, regardless of who's listening, that you would never yawn during us talking. As opposed to when I preach. There is plenty of yawning going on.
Well, I tell you what, one of the things, I don't preach often, but when I do, I'm always surprised the number of people that think they're, because they're in an audience, that they are somehow anonymous, that we cannot see what's going on in the audience. I promise you this, if you are tired, you are not the only one who knows you're tired. This past week, you talked about, How would you describe it? Because you talked about David and you talked about really kind of the righteousness of God. So that was
the topic. We were talking about the righteousness of God, and we used Daniel 9 as our main text, but we segued there via David because David was the topic of our vacation Bible school, which just concluded this week. And, you know, we tell these wonderful stories to the kids. There's so much to learn and take away from David. He's so like us in so many ways. But what we come to is God is the hero in these stories. And David understood that God is the hero in these stories. So how he began was going through some of the Psalms and David appealing to the righteousness of God.
Right.
And that's not necessarily something that we do very often, appealing to God's righteousness. We appeal to his mercy, his love, his forgiveness, but his righteousness. And so we use Daniel 9 then as a template to understand why we ought to appeal to God's righteousness.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Why is God being righteous a good thing for people who are, let's face it, unrighteous?
The question basically provides the answer. It is for that reason. God is the constant. Mm-hmm. God is righteous. He constantly follows through on what he says. We, on the other hand, are the opposite. We are unrighteous in our behavior. Mm-hmm. Romans 1 begins that same way. We did not use Romans in the sermon, but of course, Romans 1, the passage we know best in Romans 1, verses 16 and 17, the gospel reveals the righteousness of God. But then you go to verse 18, God's wrath is revealed against the ungodliness and unrighteousness of man. Mm-hmm. So here we have again, just like in Daniel's day, you have righteous God and you have unrighteous man. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important that God is righteous. He is fixed. He is going to do what he has said. And the beauty of the God that we worship, as opposed to other concepts of God and gods that other peoples have worshiped and viewed as being their superior, this is not simply, okay, God is righteous, therefore do what he says. Yes, he is righteous. We are to follow him, but that's where our unrighteousness comes in. But God has also said, okay, when you fail and you are going to fail, come back to me.
Right.
I will take you back. If you'll actually come back to me with your heart, putting your faith in me, I will take you back. God is righteous only if he does what he says he would do. And that's why we as unrighteous people, we need a righteous God. We constantly depart from him, but he is always there. He's fixed. He's constant. And he is saying, come back to me. I will restore you. I will forgive you. I'll make you whole again. I'll make you my people again. And God is righteous when he does that.
You talked about the promises of God and really kind of how the promises of God are a powerful thing and an important thing. Why is that peculiar with God?
You ever promise anything to your kids that you couldn't keep?
You mean other than every day?
I think all of us find ourselves unknowingly and not purposely doing that.
Yeah.
We make a promise that, you know, I'm going to do this. And then something got in the way.
Yeah.
Work, another obligation. I'll share a story. This is something my son, thankfully, my oldest son has forgiven me of this. He never brings this up. But I remember he was in Boy Scouts. And he was so excited about being in Boy Scouts. He loves nature. He loves being outdoors. He loves all these things. Well, it was going to be his first camp out. We had gone through the trouble of securing the supplies that we needed for the camp out. And unfortunately, those of you who know me, you know that I am an allergy sufferer. And there are times of year where it gets really bad. Well, the day of the camp out comes, and this happens to be a day when I don't know what the pollen count was. It must have been astronomical. My eyes were shut. Right. I could not get my eyes open.
Right.
And so imagine, here I am. I am not feeling well, and now I have to tell my, at that time, probably 6, maybe 7-year-old son, Dad cannot take you on your camp out tonight.
Right, right.
I mean, I feel bad about that to this day. I couldn't keep that promise. It was out of my power. God, and we talk about the attributes of God. We talk about God's omnipotence. He is all powerful. We talk about God's omniscience. He is all knowing. So all these things about God means he can keep the promises that he made. There's a willingness on his part, and there is the ability on his part. Oftentimes we have the willingness, we just don't have the ability. God is not lacking in that. He can do all the things that he's promised to do.
Right. Yeah. Basically what you're talking about there is us having limited control over what's just around us, or sometimes even the things within us. And that's certainly true. And you also address there that sometimes our intentions change. Maybe we change our mind on something. And that's another way that we might break a promise. But God has the ability to not change his mind. God has the ability to have all the resources at his control. And the other thing, and I'll tell you this, as a guy who's 53 years old, sometimes I just flat out forget that I promised that I would do something for somebody. And God doesn't have that problem either. Everything about keeping a promise that could go awry, that's not a problem with God, because he remembers everything. He has all power and he has always good intentions. So yeah, that's exactly right. God has made several promises today. What are some of those promises, and what should we actually pay a lot of attention to?
Well, there are the promises that perhaps we as believers and as members of the Lord's church that we pay attention to probably more so than others. We think often of forgiveness of sins, and there's no downplaying the magnitude of that promise. That is the promise that, you know, really the Bible story is leading to. How is it that man who sinned in the garden could possibly have those sins, you know, done away with? And God has promised that in his son that would take place. We also think of promises that are yet to be realized. The promise of an eternity with God in heaven. That promise is there. It's not yet realized. And so we think about that promise. But Kenny, if there's one promise that I think about more today, it is the promise of peace. That regardless of how it is you consume news or events, and for some that is, you know, social media, for others it is news feeds or even you know, news online or on television, others it's just, you know, communicating with acquaintances, family, friends, and you learn about things that are going on today, and you learn about what's going on in our world. And they call it doom scrolling as far as, you know, looking at the news. They call it that for a reason.
Yeah.
because you can literally sit there and with your device, just scroll through headline after headline after headline, and it's all troublesome. It is all meant to produce anxiety and concern.
Yeah.
And it robs us of peace. And I think of the promise that Jesus made to us in John 16 and verse 33. He says, "These things I have spoken to you so that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take courage, I have overcome the world." Mm-hmm. I think that's a promise that we really ought to think about. God is righteous, and God will fulfill that promise. But like so many of God's promises, they are contingent. They are contingent on, will I follow God or not? And what that means in this case is, again, approach everything in faith. Yeah, we're not gonna take away from the fact that most of the news is bad. Mm-hmm. There are legitimate reasons for concern in our world, but that does not have to make us troubled. If we have faith and we consider that our Lord has in fact overcome, and therefore he has promised that we too will overcome, peace is still there for us. God has promised it, and he is going to be righteous in giving us that peace if we will come to him in faith. So for me, that's probably the promise that I think of more. It's that promise that's available to us right now. Again, many of us, the promise of forgiveness of sins, we've experienced that. We continue to experience that. There's a future promise of heaven, of eternal peace with God. But there's also this current promise. You can have peace right now if you will, again, have your faith in your God.
So what you're telling me is that if we would just follow God, this thing in the Ukraine just going to blow over. Is that right?
I don't think I said that. pretty sure I didn't.
Yeah, because I think one of the things, I know you believe this, and if you disagree, please say so. But the peace that God is promising us may not take effect here. This world is filled with sinful problems.
Well, that gets to, what are we defining as peace?
Right.
Jesus did not say, and again, think of the verse, in this world you have tribulation.
Right.
He's not saying the problems don't exist.
Right.
So peace from that standpoint, no, it's not going to be present in this world. This world is going to continue to have troubles. It's going to continue to be filled with trouble. Mm-hmm. But me and my outlook and in my personal again, am I anxious or calm? I can still have peace because I have put my faith in the constant, in God who is righteous and who is going to, regardless of what happens to me in this world, is going to provide. That's the peace that Jesus is offering.
That's exactly right. And just so you know that this doesn't mean, well, we're in this world. We're always not going to be at peace. There's always going to be problems. You know, Paul would say in Romans, as far as it's under your control, be peaceable with
men.
Yeah. So I mean that doesn't give you license to go out and be a I guess a troublemaker. Don't be a troublemaker. If there's somebody who's going to be a peacemaker, that should be you. But don't expect that this is going to be a peaceful world. It's just not going to be. You see what I'm saying there, Josh?
Absolutely.
Okay. When we look at the relationship that we have with God, and you talked about, and in this lesson, you were stressing the righteousness of God. But here we are in a relationship with an all-righteous God, and we are not righteous. It seems to me that all the relationships that we have are negotiated. And what I mean by that is, you and Jana get to define what a good marriage is. If it works for you, if it works for Jana, that's a good marriage. You and your friends get to decide what a good friendship is. If it works for you, if it works for them, it's a good friendship. But a relationship with God isn't that way. You don't negotiate a relationship with God. Shouldn't God be more negotiable? Shouldn't he be somebody who accommodates my problems? Is it fair that I always have to rise to his standard, but he doesn't accommodate mine.
So there's a way in which that is true, and there's a way in which you're the question, I'm not saying you, but the question is absolutely wrong.
Right.
The standard has to be what it is, because again, the standard is based on that which is fixed. To mm-hmm. ask that God change the standard, you're asking God to change himself. And that's not going to happen. The right. standard is what it is because God is constant. His holiness, his righteousness, his love, his mercy, his justice, all those things are fixed constants. And if we have a hard time grasping that, okay, that's because we're not God. Okay.
Right.
We don't fully understand that. Where I would say that the question is not necessarily relevant to when we talk about God is because I would say God has accommodated.
Right.
The story of the Bible is that God has accommodated. I'll tell you, when we were going through Daniel chapter 9, and I just love that. I've looked at that chapter before in just, you know, tips on how to pray and how to make prayers to God. Been looking at it this time just to emphasize what does it mean that God is righteous. And it really helped me to appreciate something that Jesus said while he was on this earth, where he said in Matthew 9 and verse 13, I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners.
Mm-hmm.
That if there was ever a person that we read about in Scripture that could have claimed, okay, hey, I'm righteous enough, Daniel would probably be in the short list of those kinds of people.
Yeah.
And yet Daniel confesses in that prayer, I'm not righteous. I know I fall short of your standard. I know this. And me and my people, we have all fallen short. You contrast that with who Jesus is talking to in the Pharisees, and they just cannot admit that their way of doing things is not the standard. And Jesus said, okay, I didn't come to call you.
All right.
Because you don't want God's righteousness. You're wanting how you've defined righteousness. I've come to call sinners. Sinners are the people who understand, oh yeah, we did fall short. And we need God to make us righteous. And that's what he's promising. You mentioned Romans again. Not that we ever do that on this podcast. But consider, we could read all of Romans chapter 5.
Yeah,
but in the latter part of Romans chapter 5, Paul is contrasting Adam with Christ. And whereas in Adam, death came to all, he says in verse 17, that if because of one man's trespass, death reigned through that one man, much more will those who receive the abundance of grace and the free gift of righteousness reign in life through the one man, Jesus Christ. If that's not accommodation, I don't know what is. Because this is God saying, yeah, you're all unrighteous. I'm going to send my son who is righteous. And because of him, his sacrifice for you, his ongoing work as high priest on your behalf, you, even though in your actions and behaviors are unrighteous, by putting your faith in my son and following me through my son and by being identified in my son, you're going to be righteous.
Mm-hmm.
He never changed the standard. But he can make us righteous because of what he did in the Son.
Right. And I think part of the problem with the question as posed is this. Not all of the relationships that you have that are negotiated are functional relationships.
That's true.
You start thinking about the extreme dysfunction in some of your relationships. Well, what defined them as dysfunctional relationships?
Right.
It's somebody who lies all the time. It's somebody who's lazy. It's somebody who has usually a character flaw that sometimes you have to accommodate for. That character flaw is not a good thing. And if you're in a good, supportive relationship, the person that's in that relationship with you should be saying, look, get off the couch. You need to be doing something.
Yeah. No, that's a really good aspect to that I had not really considered, because even thinking of, you know, the relationship you have with your spouse, okay, a negotiated relationship. Well, Kenny, have you had to renegotiate your side since you got married? I know I've renegotiated my side. And a lot of that was because here's what I thought I was needing to do when I entered into this marriage. And now it has come to my attention. Oh, no. That's not all that is needed. That for this to work, there's some things that I needed to work on to make sure that this worked. And so I had to kind of renegotiate my position here, that is what we're willing to do.
Yeah. Absolutely. The longer that I'm married, the more I recognize two things. I think the first thing is I'm not nearly as good as I think I am, because Katie helps me figure out the problems that are there. And in some ways, I'm not nearly as bad as I think I am sometimes. That my wife knows both how to praise and criticize me. And, you know, not always perfectly on either. Same here. The more that we adhere to a standard, and let's just not put too fine a point on this, but the more that we adhere to an objective standard, aka God's standard, the better off we really are. We are still two idiots that are still trying our best to conform to that standard. We are not there yet. But the closer we get to that, the better off we both are. You see what I'm saying there, Josh?
Absolutely.
Okay. You ended up, but you kind of started and ended in the same way, because righteousness ends up being a very comforting promise for us. Why is it good for us that God is righteous, and how are we better off for God's righteousness?
Why it is good for us is, again, because our experience is with people that are not fixed. They're not constant. Mm-hmm. Ourselves wake up purposing to act and live in one way, and all it takes is a few minutes in traffic and we're completely off track. You know, mm-hmm. we're not thinking in the same way that we were. So here we are, we bounce around our lives, and we find people that are not true to their word. They're not true to themselves. We're not true to our own selves. And so we find all this conflict and all this chaos in our lives. And yet here is God, and he is constant. And that, at first glance, again, working our way through Daniel 9, that shows us how big of a mess we're in. Because our lives are not, and they're not what God intended for them to be or wants them to be. So we see in that, and that's a good thing, by the way. Mm-hmm. A good thing to understand that there is a fixed standard there, and that I need to shoot for it, and I need to understand I'm not hitting the mark. I'm not attaining that. But then to understand that this righteous God has said, I can forgive you of that. And I can get you there. You can't get there on your own, but I can get you there. Mm-hmm. That's why it's good for us. And that's how it makes us better. Because if we quit aiming for something, if we quit striving for something, I mean, you've seen people, maybe you've even done it in your own life, you know, where you just gave up. Maybe it was some goal. Maybe it was some job, some task, and you just gave up. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens to life when you do that? What happens to our spirituality when we just give up? Mm-hmm. It's we're better for it that God has a standard, but God's righteousness is for our good because we don't meet that standard. But he's saying, "Well, I'll get you there anyway."
Yeah, and you know, I know we've brought this up before. It's not just that God is righteous, but God's righteousness coupled with his love for us, that he considers us. It would be one thing if we had an all-righteous God who had no care for us at all. That would do us no good. It would just be somebody who's showing us up all the time.
Yeah.
This is a God that is all-righteous, that cares for you and me to make sure that we're taken care of. So, yeah. That's a very good thing indeed. So anyway, I really like this sermon. I thought this was actually a really smart way to bring that together. Do you have any ideas what you're going to be talking about next time?
I do.
Okay.
I have been mulling this over for some time, and I think I'm going to be here enough in the next few weeks to kind of do this and to give it some justice. So I have preached several sermons from Galatians in the last few months, mm-hmm. and I taught a Bible class from Romans in the last few months. And if you were in either or both of those, then there's an Old Testament figure that's pretty prominent in both. And that Old Testament figure is Abraham. Even in the VBS that we just concluded, one of the songs we sing with the kids rather frequently is Father Abraham Had Many Sons, and I will not dare go into any more of that right now.
I understand.
But there is this figure who keeps coming up in the New Testament, and it is Abraham. And particularly, Paul says in Romans 4 and verse 16 that he is the father of us all. Mm-hmm. I want to go through the story of Abraham and look at how it is that we today are repeating the same story. So that's what we're going to start on. Hint, start on. So yes, it's a series. I do not want to hear your critiques. Show me somebody that can do the entire story of Abraham in one lesson, and I will just cede my time to him. But we're going to start that on Sunday. I'm really excited about this. I hope it will go over like I hope it will.
Well, it sounds like an interesting idea. I think it has a lot of potential. And this is the first time in a long time that you've agreed that it is a series. So this will be, this I think has the potential to be very good. So I look forward to talking about it, man.
Thanks, Kenny.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to know us a little bit more, you're welcome to watch a live stream service or join us in person at the University Church of Christ in Tampa, Florida. We have all of our information at universitychurchofchrist.org. Until next time, God bless you in your walk with God.